Welcome to the AI Hustle Podcast, the podcast where we break down the latest in AI news, tools, and interview experts helping you hustle and do more using AI. If you've been following the podcast for a while, you'll know that over the last 6 months, I've been working on a stealth AI startup. Of the hundreds of projects I've covered, this is the one that I believe has the greatest potential. So today I'm excited to announce AI Box. AI Box is a no-code AI app building platform paired with the App Store for AI that lets you monetize your AI tools. The platform lets you build apps by linking together AI models like ChatGPT, Midjourney, and 11 Labs. Eventually, we'll integrate with software like Gmail, Trello, and Salesforce, so you can use AI to automate every function in your organization. To get notified when we launch and be one of the first to build on the platform, you can join the waitlist at aibox.ai. The link is in the show notes. We are currently raising a seed round of funding. If you're an investor that is focused on disruptive tech, I'd love to tell you more about the platform. You can reach out to me at jaden@aibox.ai. I'll leave that email in the show notes. We hear all the time that ChatGPT and all of these different AI models are trained on an enormous corpus of text data. But what exactly is this data, right? A lot of people have come up with different things like, oh, it's like a third of the internet, or it's 90% of the internet, or 80%. Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about what exactly is inside the black box known as ChatGPT, Google, Facebook, all of these different AI companies that are training their AI models on data. We're going to be talking about what exactly this data is, what's inside it, and like, what are the actual websites? This is an incredibly interesting podcast, in my opinion, and you're going to want to listen close because other than just talking about the specific websites, it's going to give you a really good idea of why ChatGPT and all these different AI models are really good at some things and not really good at others, because you're going to be able to, we're talking about what goes into them, and it's going to kind of give us some ideas about why it says some of the things it says. So first off, a lot of this that we're going to be talking about is coming from some research out of the Allen Institute for AI. And they actually went and they decided to dig in a little bit into what's called Google's C4 data set. So it's essentially just a massive snapshot of content from 15 million different websites that were used to construct some of the most high-profile English language AIs. And so that would be Google's T5 and Facebook's Llama. OpenAI doesn't necessarily disclose what data set they're using to train the models backing ChatGPT, but we can assume it's some pretty similar things, and you'll see why in a little bit. But, you know, suffice it to say, this is going to be the data that's in Google Bard, and that is coming out of a lot of the Facebook products as well, and inevitably, this is probably what's in ChatGPT as well. Now, this being said, I would say it's important to know that of all of the content we're going to talk about today, this is still only a small amount of data. This is what was essentially scraped in April 2019 by the company. It's a nonprofit called Common Crawl. That's for Google's 4C data set, which is using a lot of different AI just use this giant data set. And so I think that while it's really huge, 15 million websites and all of the content on them, and some people call it like a gargantuan data set, it's still, you know, it's probably about 40 times smaller than what GPT-3 was trained on. So this, while it might seem big, is actually still a lot smaller than GPT-3. And the assumption is that GPT-4 is even much bigger than this, although they haven't actually released how many parameters are in GPT-4. So what's important to know on all of this is one of the biggest content sections in this entire data set is just in business in general. So business and industrial websites, they made up about 16% of the entire data set. And the number one website in that was fool.com, which if you don't know, it's just like a financial investment advice kind of website. So that is kind of interesting, as a lot of people are experimenting with different use cases for investments and other areas like that out of ChatGPT. So not very far behind fool.com was kickstarter.com. That is the crowdsourcing, you know, raising money for different businesses and that kind of stuff. Below that a little bit, they had Patreon, which was a pretty big chunk of that, which if you don't know, it just helps creators collect monthly fees from subscribers for exclusive content. So that is actually pretty interesting that they were able to get the Patreon list what people are essentially selling. And I feel like between Fool, Kickstarter, and Patreon, that's kind of like three different industries online that make that process a lot of money. And so I'd be really curious to see what kind of data it gathered from that would be useful in generating business ideas in general. Kickstarter and Patreon might, give the AI, I think, a lot of access to different ideas for marketing and just like technology and just a lot of really different interesting ideas. The next biggest area behind finance that these models were trained on would appear to be the news. So news and media accounted for, I think, about half of the top 10 sites overall in the entire data thing were news outlets. So New York Times was number 4, LA Times was number 6, The Guardian number 7, Forbes, Huffington Post, Washington Post. And so I think, like artists and creators, a lot of these news organizations have criticized tech companies for using their content without authorization or compensation, right? Like, essentially, they're just scraping all of this kind of news data. And a lot of these news companies are complaining about that. So it's going to be interesting that all of those that is getting sucked into this as well. So I think they found that several different media outlets that rank low on NewsGuard's independent scale for trustworthiness showed up in there. And the Washington Post did a news article about this whole thing, and they specifically kind of commented on this. This is also interesting as a lot of these different like trustworthiness or fact-checking organizations have come under scrutiny and have also themselves had a lot of flack. I think overall online, a lot of people don't really love the whole fact-checking going on beneath posts. I noticed on Twitter that's mostly been replaced with community notes, so just allowing anyone to go. If a community creator is ranked high enough, then they'll be able to post like a high-quality link disputing a specific claim, which is kind of interesting because that, in a sense, democratizes it away from, I think in the past, a lot of fact-checking websites were selected essentially by routers or other organizations, and people complained about who got to pick them, yada yada. So I think democratizing a little bit was good. In any case, Washington Post wasn't happy that Russian state-backed news site RT.com was included in the list of media outlets, and also they were complaining that Breitbart.com, which is a right-wing news opinion website, was on there. It's kind of interesting, regardless of anyone's political opinions, right or left or whatever. I think it's really important to have news from different perspectives and all this kind of content. It's kind of a big debate in AI. People, a lot of opinion pieces on the Washington Post specifically talk about, like, why would we have untrustworthy training data put into this? That's going to propagate bias and propaganda, misinformation, all that sort of stuff. I actually think it's pretty important to have a wide variety of opinions, false and real, that this is trained off of, because these represent the opinions of a wide range of people in the world. And anyone that says their opinions, their biases, because everyone has biases, that theirs are the exclusive right ones, lacks a lot of perspective, obviously, because people have a lot of different opinions and a lot of different perspectives. And I think it's important to kind of encapsulate all of that. And you can pick what you believe or what you don't believe, but I saw the Washington Post in that same article was complaining that there's like a list essentially of words that get blacklisted. So if one of these words is in an article, it doesn't get added to the, it's not supposed to get added to the training data. One of those words was swastika. Obviously, swastikas reference Nazis and Hitler and all that kind of bad stuff. But they were complaining that the word swastika still showed up in this giant training data set over 75,000 times, even though technically it was a blacklisted word. And that kind of got me thinking that, I feel like it's not a very good idea to have completely blacklisted words, even though obviously swastikas represent a political party that did a lot of horrible things in the world. Why would we want to remove that word, right? Like, why wouldn't we just want to say, swastikas and Germany are bad, but obviously it's part of something that happened in history, right? We can't just erase that and hope that AI never talks about it. And I think it actually is, it could cause more harm than good, because I think it's important to have these AI models ingest words or whatever that might be deemed bad, because it's important. And then, you could train it and tell them, obviously, swastikas and Nazism and killing people is horrible. But I think it's important that that's in there, because it needs to know all of those different concepts. And I think it's important that we're not just, I get really nervous looking at how AI models are trained. When people are trying to put any sort of bias on the model, or remove different segments, or remove different blacklisted words, it just doesn't feel very good. It feels a lot like censorship. And I think it's fine to have all the content on there, and then people can choose what they believe. And you could put safeguards in there and say X, Y, and Z topics are bad. And I think that's probably what Google and OpenAI are doing here, against the, to the complaints of the journalists. They're including words like swastika in there that obviously could be a red flag, but I'm assuming they're referencing, I would hope, or they have worked this in, referencing that, obviously swastika is a symbol that represents something not good, right? But I don't think you want to just like pull that out completely, because then it doesn't know anything about a very important atrocity that happened in the world. So I don't see why you'd want to remove that completely. In any case, my swastika tangent there. I think one of the other really big areas that is in this is religious sites. I think about 5% of all the content were religious sites. Obviously, this makes sense, right? There's over 1 billion Muslims in the world. There's over 1 billion Christians in the world. These are, very large percentages of the population, so I don't think that's shocking, despite some commentators, I don't know, having different opinions on that. In any case, yeah, and I also think that that's really useful for anyone that would like to learn about different cultures or religions or people, to have all of that different content on there. So it would seem like it'd be a it's a big part of the world. It would be a good thing to have incorporated into these AI models. Another area that seems to have made a pretty big chunk up of this 15% is personal blogs. So it's actually the second largest category. Sorry if I said it was what did I say it was before? I said news. News is actually number three. Second biggest is personal blogs. And oh, the one other really interesting thing about this that I forgot to mention at the beginning is that 30% of all the content that is in this giant data set that's used for so many different AI models is currently not available online anymore, meaning it was websites that expired, they got taken down, people removed them, changed the URL, whatever it is. And the reason why I bring this up and why I think this is so important is because if you think about it, Google, that collected this giant data set, 30% of all the content they collected is now essentially exclusive to them, right? They have like 30% of it is gone now, so they're the only ones with it. And it's going to be interesting, because people are talking about, claiming rights to their data. Reddit recently said they're going to start charging companies to train models off of Reddit, which was a really big part of OpenAI's data set for ChatGPT. But if companies like Reddit are going to start charging, this data obviously is getting more valuable, and now Google has like this massive, I call it like a black hole of data. Like 30% of all their data is exclusively to them, because it's gone off the internet, but they have access to it. So that's really interesting. I wonder how valuable that is, because no one else will have access to that data. And if it's off the internet, probably no one else will ever claim copyright or access or like ownership of it down the line into the future. Another really interesting thing is that a lot of these AI models, it has been said, are actually, when they categorize all of the data that they're collecting, they're not really categorizing, a lot of it is not categorizing the authors and different things like that, because they're kind of worried about personal data that's getting sucked in, which we'll talk about in a second, because there is a lot of personal data that has been sucked into these models, and I'm curious how that's being used or pulled out or scraped or integrated. But in any case, as we were talking about, number two biggest chunk of this entire thing is personal blogs. And that includes a lot of different platforms like sites.google.com, which can be, you know, anything from, you know, like a Catholic preschool in New Jersey to a, you know, a judo club in New York, whatever. So these are all just random things. And that's a really big chunk of this. So I think that's more than 500,000 personal blogs were pulled into that, which is, you know, representing about 4% of the total categorized tokens. So of the actual text length, 15% of all of the sites, but 4% of the actual text that was inputted to train things on. So it's pretty interesting. A lot of this is WordPress, Tumblr, Blogspot, and LiveJournal. And I think this is why there's just a lot of different, I think this is a really important chunk because this really just gives a lot of perspective to people's feelings and thoughts around a vast array of different topics. I think that's a really valuable part to have. Like I was talking about before, a lot of companies like Google really heavily filtered the data before feeding it to AI. So C4, which this data set is called, it stands for Colossal Clean Crawled Corpus. So in addition to removing, you know, all of the duplicate text out of the whole thing, so it's not training on the same text twice, like I mentioned earlier, Google also uses a list of what they call, you know, dirty, naughty, obscene, or otherwise bad words, which is about 402 words in English and one emoji. And the company typically uses, you know, a high quality data sets to fine tune the models. And essentially, they're just trying to shield users from unwanted content, right? You don't want to ask ChatGPT something and have it cuss you out. So I think it pulls out a lot of that kind of stuff. And like we mentioned earlier, there's a lot of controversy that goes around that. I would say from both sides of the political spectrum, you know, I saw, you know, the Washington Post recently was criticizing the fact that obviously we're happy it pulls out racial slurs and obscenities, but they said that they're disappointed that it eliminated some non-sexual LGBTQ content by pulling out obscenities. So that's their complaint about it. And then their other gripe is that it includes the word swastika, so it would seem like they would like it to exclude less things from obscenities and more things from related similar to swastika. And I just think that at the end of the day, I don't think we're, I think the less bias or the less fine-tuning, the better. We'll let the users do that. In my opinion, I think that's going to be the companies that win in the end. And it would appear that Google and OpenAI are trying to stay true to that. Sam Altman has discussed that, you know, really letting people use this the way they want. Obviously not making this like a horrible racist hellscape, but making it so it's safe, but, you know, has a lot of variety of opinions and thoughts, etc. on there. So yeah, I'm sure we've talked about that enough. But in any case, it's really interesting. If you go look at the Washington Post, check out their article that they just came out with today, you can look and see if your website was trained on some of this AI data. And it shows you the top sites, which are patents.google.com is the number one website that was used here. So all of the patents that have ever been written about any content, which is really, really interesting. And that is not just in America, but all over the world, patent documents. So it's pretty interesting. All of that has been pulled in there. So a lot of really cutting edge stuff as well, which makes me think you could probably ask it, if I was Apple and wanted to write a patent for XYZ, what would I do? That's a really interesting topic. I think patents, that might be like a treasure trove. That might be a gold nugget from this episode. And from some of this research is the fact that patents is the biggest data set in there, and you could get a lot of content and ideas out of that. The second is Wikipedia.org. Obviously, all of Wikipedia is a ton of information, open source. It's kind of the perfect data set, to be honest, for training. The third is called Scribd, which is essentially audiobooks and digital books. So just a lot of all of the content of books that have ever been written. Number four is the New York Times. Then they have journals.plos.org, which is science and health. They got the LA Times, Guardian, Forbes, Huffington Post. Number 10 was patents.com, so just more patents in there. Number 12 is Coursera, which is interesting. I'd be curious to see exactly what that entails, but Coursera has a lot of courses teaching you about a lot of different topics. So that might be why ChatGPT is actually pretty good at teaching things. Fool.com for business and industrial. And there is a handful of others. So really, really interesting to see what's going to happen in the future. Like I said, Reddit recently said that they are going to start charging to train on their data. And I'm expecting to see a lot of other websites do that. So I believe that the people that got in early may actually have a good advantage in a sense that they were able to get all of this data for free. You know, ChatGPT, OpenAI trained off a lot of Twitter data before Twitter shut off its API. And now we see that Elon is going to make an AI play, probably training off of a lot of Twitter data as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the future in this whole industry. This was a long podcast today for me. You know, usually I try to do 10-minute bites. We're at over 20 minutes, so I'll leave you guys here. But I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
If you are looking for an innovative and creative community of people using ChatGPT, you need to join our ChatGPT creators community. I'll drop a link in the description to this podcast. We'd love to see you there, where we share tips and tricks of what is working in ChatGPT. It's a lot easier than a podcast, as you can see screenshots, you can share and comment on things that are currently working. So if this sounds interesting to you, check out the link in the comment. We'd love to have you in the community.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Hustle podcast. If you could do us a massive favor, we would really, really appreciate it if you could leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. This helps people find the podcast. It helps people know this is a good place to go. And we would really, really appreciate it as it helps us continue to bring on incredible guests and share incredible content for you to listen to.